Success in life could be defined as the continued expansion of happiness and the progressive realization of worthy goals. Success is the ability to fulfill your desires with effortless ease. And yet success, including the creation of wealth, has always been considered to be a process that requires hard work, and it is often considered to be at the expense of others. We need a more spiritual approach to success and to affluence, which is the abundant flow of all good things to you. There are many paths to success. Material wealth is only one component. Moreover, success is a journey, not a destination. Material abundance, in all its expressions, happens to be one of those things that makes the journey more enjoyable. But success includes good health. It includes energy and enthusiasm for life, fulfilling relationships, creative freedom, emotional and psychological stability, a sense of well-being and peace of mind. But even with the experience of all these things, we will remain unfulfilled unless we nurture the seeds of divinity inside us. In reality, we are divinity in disguise, and the gods and goddesses in embryo that are contained within us seek to be fully materialized. True success is therefore the experience of the miraculous. It is the unfolding of the divinity within us. And when we begin to experience our life as a miracle, not occasionally, but all the time, then we will know the true meaning of success. Before we define the seven laws, we have to understand the concept of what law is. Law is the process by which the unmanifest becomes the manifest. It's the process by which the observer becomes the observed. It's the process by which the seer becomes the scenery. It's the process through which the dreamer manifests the dream. All of creation, everything that exists in the physical world, is the result of the unmanifest transforming itself into the manifest. Everything that we behold comes from the unknown, our physical body, the physical universe. Anything and everything that we can perceive through our senses is the expression of the unmanifest becoming manifest. The physical universe is nothing other than the self curving back within itself to experience itself as spirit, mind, and physical matter. In other words, all processes of creation are processes through which the self or divinity expresses itself. Consciousness in motion expresses itself as the objects of the universe in the eternal dance of life. The source of all creation is divinity or the spirit. The process of creation is divinity in motion or the mind. And the object of creation is the physical universe, which includes the physical body. And these three components of reality, spirit, mind, and body, or observer, the process of observing and the observed, are essentially the same thing. They all come from the same place, the field of pure potentiality, which is purely unmanifest. The physical laws of the universe are actually this whole process of divinity in motion, or consciousness in motion. When we understand these laws and apply them in our lives, anything we want can be created, because the same laws that nature uses to create a forest or a galaxy or a human body can also bring about the fulfillment of all our other desires. Now let's go over the seven spiritual laws of success and see how we can apply them in our lives. The first spiritual law of success is the law of pure potentiality. This law is based on the fact that we are in our essential state, pure consciousness. Pure consciousness is pure potentiality, It is the field of all possibilities and infinite creativity. Other attributes of consciousness are pure knowledge, unboundedness, perfect balance, infinite silence, invincibility, simplicity, and bliss. This is our essential nature. Our essential nature is one of pure potentiality. When you discover your essential nature and know who you really are, in that knowing itself is the ability to fulfill any dream you have, because you are the eternal possibility, the immeasurable potential of all that was, is, and will be. The field of pure potentiality is your own self. And the more you come from the experience of the self, the closer you are to the field of pure potentiality. The experience of the self, or self-referral, means that our internal reference point is our own spirit, and not the objects of our experience. The opposite of self-referral is object referral. In object referral, we are always influenced by objects outside the self, which includes situations, circumstances, people, and things. In object referral, we constantly seek the approval of others. Our thinking and our behavior is always in anticipation of a response. It is therefore fear-based. In object referral, we also feel an intense need to control things. We feel an intense need for power. But if you really look at it, the need to control things, the need for approval, the need for power are needs that are based on fear. This kind of power is not the power of pure potentiality or the power of the self, which is real power, but rather power as it is usually used to control other people. If you didn't have fear, you wouldn't need to control, and you wouldn't need to struggle to have this kind of power over others. In object referral, your internal reference point is your ego. But the ego is not who you really are. The ego is your self-image. It is your social mask. And it is your social mask that wants approval. It wants to control. It wants to have power because it lives in fear. Your true self, which is your spirit, your soul, is completely free of those things. It is immune to criticism, it is unfearful of any challenge, and it feels beneath no one. And yet, even though it feels beneath no one, it is humble because it recognizes that everyone else is the same self, the same spirit, in different disguises. It feels respect for other people, while at the same time feeling beneath no one. That's the difference between object referral and self-referral. In self-referral, you experience your true being, which is unfearful of any challenge and feels beneath no one. This is true power. Power that comes from object referral through an object of reference is ego-based power and is not true power because it lasts only as long as the object is there. If you have a certain title, if you're the president of the country or the chairman of a corporation, if you have a lot of money, that kind of power goes with the job, it goes with the money, it goes with the title. And as long as you have all that, you have ego-based power. But as soon as the title, the job, the money goes away, so does the power. Self-power, on the other hand, is permanent. And there are certain characteristics of that self-power. It draws people to you, and it also draws things that you want to you. It develops in such a way that people, situations, and circumstances are drawn to you to support what you want. This is also called the support of natural law or support from the laws of nature. It is the support of divinity. It is the support that comes from being in the state of grace. And in this case, your power is such that you enjoy a bond with people and people enjoy a bond with you. Your power is that of bonding, a bonding that comes from true love. How do we access the law of pure potentiality, the field of all possibilities? If you want to enjoy the benefits of the field of pure potentiality, if you want to make full use of the creativity which is inherent in pure consciousness, then you have to have access to it. And one way to access the field is through meditation and the practice of silence. Practicing silence means making a commitment to take a certain amount of time, and you can do it periodically, to simply be. Experiencing silence means not only not speaking and not engaging in conversation, it also means not looking at television, not listening to the radio, not reading a book. Because when you read a book, you're engaged in a conversation with the author. And in this case, when you're listening to this audio right now, you're engaged in a conversation with me. I'm speaking, you're listening and evaluating, you're defining, you're judging. This is all very well at times, of course, because this is part of life, part of activity. But if activity is never given an opportunity for silence, then this creates an inner turbulence. Set aside a little time every once in a while to experience silence. Not speaking is one component of experiencing silence for a certain period of the day. You could do it for 2 hours, or if that seems a lot, do it for a 1 hour period, and every once in a while experience silence for an extended period of time, like a day or 2 days or even a whole week. What happens when you go into this experience of silence? Initially, your internal dialogue becomes even more turbulent. You have all this need. You've got to say these things. I've known people who go absolutely crazy the first day or two when they do it for an extended period of time. A sense of urgency and anxiety suddenly comes over them. But as they stay with it, the internal dialogue begins to quiet down. And as they stay with it for some time, that silence really becomes profound. Because after a while, the mind gives up. It says there's no point in going around and around if you're not going to speak, period. And as the internal dialogue quietens, you begin to experience the stillness of the field of pure potentiality. Practicing silence periodically, as it is convenient to you, is one way to experience the law of pure potentiality. Practicing non-judgment is another, because to judge is to constantly evaluate and classify things as right and wrong, good and bad. When you're constantly evaluating, classifying, labeling, analyzing, this creates a lot of turbulence in your internal dialogue. And when you create turbulence in your internal dialogue, you restrict the flow of energy between you and the field of pure potentiality. You literally squeeze the gap between thoughts. The gap is your connection to the field of pure potentiality. It is that silent space between thoughts. It is that inner stillness that connects you to true power. And when you squeeze the gap, you squeeze your connection to the field of pure potentiality and infinite creativity. There's a prayer in the Course of Miracles that says, "Today I shall judge nothing that occurs." Non-judgment creates silence in your mind. So it is a good idea to begin your day with that prayer, with that statement, and throughout the day remind yourself of that statement each time you catch yourself judging. And if practicing this procedure for the whole day seems too difficult, then you may simply say to yourself, "For the next 2 hours, I won't judge anything." Or, "For the next hour, I make this promise to myself to experience non-judgment." And then you can extend that gradually. And don't forget to spend time each day in meditation as well. Ideally speaking, meditate at least 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening. Through silence, through meditation, and through non-judgment, you will access the first law, the law of pure potentiality. And once you start doing that, you can add a fourth component to this procedure, and that is regularly spending time in communing with nature, direct connection with nature, whether it be a stream or a forest or a mountain or a lake or the seashore. That connection with nature's intelligence will also help you access the field of pure potentiality. And as you gain more and more access to the field of pure potentiality, you will spontaneously receive creative thoughts, because it is also the field of infinite creativity and pure knowledge. Franz Kafka once said, "You need not leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. You need not even listen. Simply wait. You need not even wait. Just learn to become quiet and still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet." The affluence of the universe, the lavish display and abundance of the universe, is an expression of the creative mind of nature. The more tuned in you are to the creative mind of nature, the more you have access to the infinite, unbounded creativity of nature's mind. But first, you have to go beyond the turbulence of your internal dialogue to connect with that abundant, affluent, infinite creative mind. And then you create the possibility of dynamic activity while at the same time carrying the stillness of the eternal, unbounded, creative mind. This exquisite combination of silent, unbounded, infinite mind, along with dynamic, bounded, individual mind, is the perfect balance of stillness and movement simultaneously that can create whatever you want, the coexistence of opposites. The stillness and dynamism at the same time makes you independent of situations, circumstances, people, and things. Stillness alone is the potentiality for creativity. Movement alone is creativity restricted to a certain aspect of its expression. But the combination of movement and stillness is creativity unleashed in all directions, wherever the power of intention takes you. Wherever you go in the midst of movement and activity, carry your stillness within you, and the chaotic movement around you will never overshadow your access to the reservoir of creativity, the field of pure potentiality. Access to the field of pure potentiality will also give you insight into the mirror of relationship. All relationship is a mirror of your relationship with yourself. If you have guilt, fear, and insecurity over money or anything else, then these are a reflection of guilt, fear, and insecurity as basic aspects of your personality. Money will not solve these basic problems of existence. Only intimacy with the self will bring about true healing. You must learn to get in touch with the innermost essence of your being. This true essence is beyond the ego. It is fearless, it is free, it is immune to criticism, it does not fear any challenge, it is beneath no one, and yet it is humble. And when you are grounded in the knowledge of your true self, when you really understand your true nature, you will never feel guilty, fearful, or insecure about money or affluence or fulfilling your desires, because you will realize that the essence of wealth is life energy, it is pure potentiality. And pure potentiality is your intrinsic nature.
Applying the law of pure potentiality.
I will put the law of pure potentiality into effect by making a commitment to take the following steps. 1. I will get in touch with the field of pure potentiality by taking the time each day to be silent, to just be. I will sit alone in silent meditation at least twice a day for approximately 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening. 2. In the ecstasy of my own silence, and also by communing with nature, I will enjoy the life throb of ages, the field of pure potentiality and unbounded creativity. 3. Today I will practice non-judgment. I will begin my day with the statement, "Today I shall judge nothing that occurs." And throughout the day, I will remind myself not to judge. The second spiritual law of success is the law of giving. This law could also be called the law of giving and receiving, because the universe operates through dynamic exchange. Nothing is static. Your body is in dynamic and constant exchange with the body of the universe. Your mind is dynamically interacting with the mind of the cosmos. Your energy is an expression of cosmic energy. This harmonious interaction of elements and forces in your life operates as the law of giving and receiving. And because your body and your mind and the universe are in constant and dynamic exchange, if you stop the circulation of energy, it's like stopping the flow of blood. As soon as you stop the flow of blood, it begins to clot, to coagulate, to strangle. That is why you must give and receive in order to keep wealth and affluence and abundance or anything you want in life circulating in your life. Money is really a symbol of the life energy we exchange and the life energy we use as a result of the service we provide to the universe. And in order to keep that energy coming to us, we have to keep the energy circulating. If you stop the circulation of money, if your only intention is to hold on to the money, since it is life energy, you will stop the circulation. Like a river, money must keep flowing, otherwise it begins to stagnate, to strangulate, and it can no longer support life. Circulation is what keeps it alive and vital. The word affluence, in fact, comes from the root word affluere, which means to flow to. The word affluence means to flow in abundance. In reality, receiving is the same thing as giving, because giving and receiving are different aspects of the flow of energy in the universe. The more you give, the more it will return to you, because you keep the abundance of the universe circulating in your life. What goes up must come down. What goes out must come back. And the return is directly proportional to the giving, which is unconditional and from the heart. The best way to put the law of giving into operation, to start the process of circulation, is to make a decision that any time you come into contact with anyone, you will give them something. It doesn't have to be in the form of material things. It could be a flower, a compliment, or a prayer. In fact, the most powerful forms of giving are non-material. The gifts of caring, attention, affection, appreciation, and love are some of the most precious gifts you can give, and they don't cost you anything. When you meet someone, you can silently send them a blessing, wishing them happiness, joy, and laughter. This kind of silent giving can be very powerful. One of the things that I was taught as a child, and which I taught my children also, is never to go to anyone's house without taking something. Never visit anyone without bringing them a gift. You may say, how can I give to others when at the moment I don't have enough myself? You could bring a flower, one flower. You can bring a note or a card which says something about your feelings for the person you're visiting. You can bring a compliment. You can bring a prayer. But make a decision to give wherever you go, to whomever you see. And as long as you're giving, you will be receiving. Again, it doesn't have to be anything material, but by and by include material things also. They don't have to be expensive. The most important thing is to start the process of circulation. The more you give, the more confidence you will gain in that it brings things to you. And the more you receive, the more you will also be able to give.
Applying the law of giving.
I will put the law of giving into effect by making a commitment to take the following steps. 1. Wherever I go and whoever I encounter, I shall bear a gift for them. The gift may be a compliment, a flower, or a prayer. Today I shall give something to everyone I come into contact with. And so I will begin the process of circulating wealth and affluence in my life and in the life of others. 2. Today I will gratefully receive all the gifts that life has to offer me. I will receive the gifts of nature, sunlight and the sound of birds singing, or spring showers, or the first snow of winter. I will also be open to receiving from others, whether it be in the form of a material gift, money, a compliment, or a prayer. 3. I will make a commitment to keep wealth circulating in my life by giving and receiving life's most precious gifts, the gifts of caring, affection, appreciation, and love. Each time I meet someone, I will silently wish them happiness, joy, and laughter. The third spiritual law of success is the law of karma. Karma is both action and the consequence of that action. It is cause and effect simultaneously because every action generates a force of energy that returns to us in like kind. There's nothing unfamiliar about the law of karma. Everyone has heard the expression, "What you sow is what you reap." Obviously, if we want to create happiness in our lives, we must learn to sow the seeds of happiness. Therefore, karma implies the action of conscious choice-making. You and I are essentially infinite choice-makers. In every moment of our existence, we are in that field of all possibilities, where we have access to an infinity of choices. And the best way to understand and maximize the use of karmic law is to become consciously aware of the choices we make in every moment. Whether you like it or not, the fact is that everything that is happening this moment is a result of the choices you've made in the past. Unfortunately, a lot of us make choices unconsciously, and therefore we don't think they are choices. And yet, they are. If I were to insult you, you would most likely make the choice of being offended. If I were to pay you a compliment, you would most likely make the choice of being pleased or flattered. But think about it. It's still a choice. I could offend you and I could insult you and you could make the choice of not being offended. I could pay you a compliment and you could make the choice of not letting that flatter you either. In other words, most of us, even though we are infinite choice makers, have become bundles of conditioned reflexes that are constantly being triggered by people and circumstance into predictable outcomes of behavior. These conditioned reflexes are a lot like Pavlovian conditioning. Pavlov is famous for demonstrating that if you give a dog something to eat every time you ring a bell, after a while the dog starts to salivate when you just ring the bell, because it has associated one stimulus with the other. Most of us, as a result of conditioning, have repetitious and predictable responses to the stimuli in our environment. Our reactions seem to be automatically triggered by people and circumstance, and we forget that these are still choices that we are making in every moment of our existence. We are simply making these choices unconsciously. But if you step back for a moment and witness the choices you are making as you make those choices, then in fact, in just this act of witnessing, you take the whole process from the unconscious realm into the conscious realm. And you will immediately find this to be very empowering. When you make any choice at all, you can ask yourself two things. First of all, what are the consequences of this choice that I'm making? And in your heart, you will immediately know what these are. Secondly, will this choice that I'm making now bring happiness to me and to those around me? If the answer is yes, then go ahead with that choice. If the answer is no, if that choice brings distress to either you or to those around you, then don't make that choice. It's as simple as that. There is only one choice out of the infinity of choices available in every second. One choice that will create happiness for you as well as for those around you. And when you make that one choice, it will result in a form of behavior that is called spontaneous right action. Spontaneous right action means the right action at the right moment. It's the right response to every situation as it happens. It's the action that nourishes you and everyone else that is influenced by that action. There is a very interesting mechanism that the universe has to help you make spontaneously correct choices. The mechanism has to do with sensations in your body. Your body experiences two kinds of sensations. One is a sensation of comfort, the other is a sensation of discomfort. At the moment when you're consciously making a choice, pay attention to your body and ask your body, if I make this choice, what happens? If your body sends a message of comfort, that's the right choice. If your body sends a message of discomfort, then it's not the appropriate choice. For some people, the message of comfort and discomfort is in the area of the solar plexus, but for most people, it's in the area of the heart. Consciously put your attention in the heart and ask your heart what to do. Then wait for the response, a physical response in the form of a sensation. It may be this faintest level of feeling, the faintest level of feeling, but it's there, in your body. Only the heart knows the correct answer. Most people think that the heart is mushy and sentimental, but it's not. The heart is intuitive, it is holistic, it's contextual, it's relational. It doesn't have a win-lose orientation. It taps into the cosmic computer and takes everything into account. At times, it may not even seem rational, but the heart has a computing ability that is far more accurate and far more precise than anything within the limits of rational thought. Whether we know it or not, life is a continuum of choices. Some are made consciously, others are made unconsciously. You can use the law of karma to create money and affluence and the flow of all good things to you anytime you want. But first, you must become consciously aware that your future is generated by the choices you're making in every moment of your life. If you do this on a regular basis, then you're making full use of the law of karma. And the more you bring your choices into the level of your conscious awareness, the more you will make those choices which are spontaneously correct, both for you and those around you. And then it'll become easier for you to write the script of your life. Since karma means action, then anytime you perform an action, that's a karmic episode. If you have a cup of coffee, for example, that's karma. That action generates memory, and memory has the ability, or it becomes the potentiality, to generate desire. And desire generates action again. The operational software of your soul, then, is karma, memory, and desire. That's what you're made up of. Your soul is nothing other than a bundle of consciousness that is full of this software. And all the actions in your past have created memories and desires in the operational software that exists in the gap. What about past karma and how it's influencing us now? There are three things you can do about past karma. One is to pay your karmic debts. Most people do that. They go about paying their karmic debts, and sometimes there's a lot of suffering involved in the payment of those debts. That may be a choice you make also. A lot of people choose to do this, unconsciously, of course. The law of karma says no debt in the universe ever goes unpaid. There's a perfect accounting system in this universe, and everything is a constant to and fro of energy. The second thing you can do is to transmute or transform your karma. This is a very interesting process in which you ask yourself, as you're paying your karmic debt, how can I make this experience useful to my fellow human beings? How can I learn something from it? What's here for me to learn from this experience? Why is this happening, and what is the message that the universe is giving to me? By doing this, you look for the seed of opportunity and tie that seed of opportunity with your dharma, with your purpose in life, which we'll talk about in the seventh spiritual law of success. And then you transmute the karma to a new expression. You haven't really gotten rid of your karma, but you're able to take a karmic episode and create a new karma out of it. The third way to deal with karma is to transcend it. Transcend means to wash it off, to become completely independent of it. And the way to transcend the karma is to keep going into the gap. It's like washing a dirty piece of cloth in a stream of water. Every time you wash it, you take away a few stains. You keep washing it and washing it. You wash or transcend the seeds of your karma by going into the gap and coming out again. And this, of course, is done through the practice of meditation. You can become a conscious choice maker and learn to generate actions that are evolutionary for you and for those that are around you. And that's all you need to do. And as long as karma is evolutionary for both the self and everyone affected by the self, then the fruit of karma will be happiness and success.
Applying the law of karma or cause and effect.
I will put the law of karma into effect by making a commitment to take the following steps. 1. Today I will witness the choices I make in each moment. And in the mere witnessing of these choices, I will bring them to my conscious awareness. I will know that the best way to prepare for any moment in the future is to be fully conscious in the present. 2. Whenever I make a choice, I will ask myself 2 questions. What are the consequences of this choice that I'm making? And will this choice bring fulfillment and happiness to me and also to those that are affected by this choice? 3. I will then ask my heart for guidance and be guided by its message of comfort or discomfort. If the choice feels comfortable, I will plunge ahead with abandon. If the choice feels uncomfortable, I will pause and see the consequences of my action with my inner vision. This guidance will enable me to make spontaneously correct choices for myself and for all those around me. The 4th spiritual law of success is the law of least effort. This law is based on the fact that nature's intelligence functions with effortless ease and abandoned carefreeness. This is the principle of least action, of no resistance. This is, therefore, the principle of harmony and love. And we can learn this lesson from nature and easily fulfill our desires. If we observe nature at work, we see that least effort is expended. Grass doesn't try to grow, it just grows. Fish don't try to swim, they just swim. Flowers don't try to bloom, they bloom. Birds don't try to fly, they fly. This is their intrinsic nature. The earth doesn't try to spin on its own axis. It is the nature of the earth to hurtle through space. It is the nature of babies to be in bliss. They bubble with bliss. It is the nature of the sun to shine. It is the nature of the stars to glitter and sparkle. And it is human nature to make our dreams manifest into physical form, easily and effortlessly. In Vedic science, the age-old philosophy of India, this principle is known as the principle of economy of effort, or do less and accomplish more. Ultimately, you come to the state where you do nothing and accomplish everything. This means that there is just a faint idea, and then the manifestation of the idea comes about effortlessly. What is commonly called a miracle is actually an expression of the law of least effort. Nature's intelligence functions effortlessly, frictionlessly, spontaneously. It is non-linear, it is intuitive, holistic, and nourishing. And when you are in harmony with nature, when you are established in the knowledge of your true self, you can make use of the law of least effort. Least effort is expended when your actions are motivated by love, because nature is held together by this energy of love. When you seek power and control over other people, you waste energy. When you seek money or power for the sake of the ego, you spend energy chasing the illusion of happiness instead of enjoying happiness in the moment. When you seek money for personal gain only, you cut off the flow of energy to you and interfere with the expression of nature's intelligence. But when your actions are motivated by love, there is no wastage of energy. When your actions are motivated by love, your energy multiplies and accumulates, and the surplus energy you gather and enjoy can be channeled to create anything that you want, including unlimited wealth. You can think of your physical body as a device for controlling energy. It can generate, store, and expend energy. If you know how to generate, store, and expend energy in an efficient way, then you can create any amount of wealth. Attention to the ego consumes the greatest amount of energy. When your internal reference point is the ego, when you seek power and control over other people, or seek approval from others, you spend energy in a wasteful way. When that energy is freed up, it can be rechanneled and used to create anything that you want. When your internal reference point is your spirit, when you are immune to criticism and unfearful of any challenge, you can harness the power of love and use energy creatively for the experience of affluence and evolution. In The Art of Dreaming, Carlos Castaneda writes, "Most of our energy goes into upholding our importance. If we were capable of losing some of that importance, two extraordinary things would happen to us. One, we would free our energy from trying to maintain the illusory idea of our grandeur. And two, we would provide ourselves with enough energy to catch a glimpse of the actual grandeur of the universe."